Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Stoma for Life. Now, today is a very special show. I was asked a few days ago by UK Health Radio if I wouldn't be interested in interviewing a young lady with an extraordinary story. Have you heard of appendix cancer before? Well, I certainly have not. Other than that we are all born with one and that sometimes it gets inflamed and has to be removed, I had never heard anything close to what today's guest is going to share with us. Faye Louise is a flight dispatcher and fashion model turned advocate. She is also known as Just Faye Louise on Instagram and Twitter. Beyond her advocacy work, Faye is a vivacious spirit, brimming with life, energy, and creativity. From her passion from reading and art to treasured moments with her dog and loved ones, Faye's zest for life is absolutely contagious. And let's not overlook her love for travel, exploring new destinations, and savoring the diverse cuisines around the world with her partner. Faye's journey is nothing short of a miracle. Just 3 months into a life-saving and transformative surgery following a diagnosis of appendix cancer, her resilience and transformation from a model to a passionate awareness advocate is genuinely exceptional. Now, I know this is going to be an extensive interview because Faye Louise has a lot to share. This is part one, and I am truly honored to welcome Faye Louise to share her remarkable story. Welcome to the show, Faye.
Hi, Rafaela. Thank you for having me.
I'm truly thrilled to have you on the show. Now, your journey is so unique, especially considering that the life-saving surgery you underwent is just 3 months ago due to appendix cancer. Can you share with our listeners how this all started?
Yeah, so I've always suffered with heavy periods since I was a teen, really, and nothing was really out of the norm for me. So I didn't really think much of it, to be honest, at the beginning. Then I lost my mum to bowel cancer 2 years ago, sadly. She never made it. And I started to get these abdominal cramps. So I was a little bit scared of obviously bowel cancer or any cancer through my lifetime now after losing my mother to it. It always made me feel very on edge, like, what is my life going to be? You know, am I going to end up one day with this?
Yeah.
Ironically, I did. But yeah, so I had these abdominal cramps. They used to be a week before my period and a week after my period. So that's why I thought there was nothing out of the ordinary for me, really. And then they were extending beyond my period. So that's when I said to my partner, something's not right. And he said, look, you're just anxious because of your mum. You're all right. I'm sure nothing's wrong. And I said to him, I need to go. I need to phone the doctor. This is something that I need to just, for my own anxiety, peace of mind, if you like, I just need to just get seen. So that was March 2023 that I went to the GP and asked them, you know, I just said, I'm getting these abdominal cramps in my groin area mostly, and they're extending after my period, which is a little bit unusual now. And she asked me if I ever had a problem with my appendix at first. And I said, no, they've never burst. I've never had any issues with appendix or anything. And she basically said, well, I'm going to order you an ultrasound, but I'm going to put you on what we call a two-week rush. And I was like, what's that? And she said, it's a cancer pathway. And I looked at her like, what? And she said, I don't think you've got anything there. But because of the state of the NHS at the moment, if we hang around, just put you on a normal list, you're not going to get seen for a while. Yeah. So I want to try and rush it through so we can just do an ultrasound scan and get you seen. I said, okay. She said, in the meantime, I'm going to prescribe you with some Laxido because we think maybe a little bit of constipation going on as well. So she gave me the Laxido. I started to take that. I mean, it didn't really ease off much really for me. And then the day came for the ultrasound scan in April, back end of April, I believe it was, where I went to Crawley Hospital. No, sorry, Redhill Hospital. I'm sorry, I've been to so many hospitals, I get mixed up. You'll have to bear with me. I went to Redhill Hospital for my ultrasound scan. It was an abdominal one at first, but then she asked me whether I'll be happy for her to do the transvaginal scan, because they can get a better look at what's going on with that rather than just on the outside. So I said, "Is it going to hurt?" Obviously, that's the only thing you want to know. Is this going to hurt? And she said, "No more than a smear test. It'll just be completely fine." I said, "Yeah, okay. We need to know what's going on, and I need to know what's going on as well." So she did a ultrasound scan. And she said that she could see a growth on there, on my ovary. And my first question was, does it look like cancer? And she said, no, it's very fluid filled, but it's very large. So I want to order you a CT scan now, just so I can see in detail what's inside the cyst, because some of them come with hair, bones, teeth, human body parts and things. And I was like, what? Okay. So yeah, she sent me then to Crawley Hospital for this CT scan. So that was performed with like the dye they put in you that lights you up, like the Ready Breath advert. And they don't tell you anything on the day, what they've seen or anything like that. Just your results will come back in a few weeks. So at this point, I'd started as a flight dispatcher role. I was very happy, new career move and everything, love aviation. So I was really happy that I got into that. And I had the call when I was at work. My CT scan had come back and they'd found a cyst. Obviously, we knew it was a cyst, but they're just confirming it was a cyst on my ovary, my left ovary, but it was 17 centimeters. And I was like, right, okay. So
Huge.
what does that mean? And they said, well, because it's so large now, we can't do keyhole surgery. It's a bit risky because we don't want it to burst, if you like, removing it through keyhole. So you're going to have open surgery. Well, for me, that was like a horror show in itself because I'm 38 years old and I've been so lucky. I've never had an operation in my life. And I was like, oh God, what do you mean open surgery? And they said, it's just like a little mini cut just below the bikini line. You won't see it. It's not going to affect your modeling or anything like that. And I was like, okay. So I was like, right, so an operation's on the cards. So I told my employer obviously everything that's going on. And I was due to go into work on the Sunday morning. I woke up, I had the most horrific pain in my abdomen and my groin, thinking it was just the cyst. Obviously, maybe it had popped, because some of them can pop on their own. I was told that. So yeah, I ended up going back to Crawley Hospital, to the A&E, where I was in there for a few hours. Again, they did another ultrasound scan, and said that we can feel the cyst. We when we push in your abdomen, we can feel the cyst. We just think it's nothing but the cyst. And you're due surgery soon at Redhill, aren't you? I said, yeah, the 7th of August. They were like, right, so we just have to wait for that operation. In the meantime, paracetamol, ibuprofen, ginger tea really helped, actually. That really helped me. Ginger with lemon tea helped just to take some of the discomfort away after I've eaten. And yeah, so that was how it was left at that point. 7th of August came around, packed my little overnight bag, went to Redhill Hospital, absolutely petrified of having open surgery, if you like. I'd never been put under general anaesthetic, so I was absolutely terrified out of my wits' end. Am I going to wake up? Is it going to be okay? Am I going to bleed out on the table? Just all these irrational things in your head, but you can't help it, you
No,
know?
you can't.
So on the morning of the operation, my consultant came in and she said, I've looked at the scans again, nothing shown in your blood tests, nothing. Well, the CA levels were a little bit elevated. But she said that because you've got the size of the cyst, that can cause the CA125 levels to go up. Many factors can, your period, hormones, anything. So the cancer markers are not always accurate. That's what she told me. I was like, right, okay. And she said, and I thought about that, and it could be that you have a little bit of endometriosis, which could cause them to like elevate as well. So I said, okay. So I said, we're just going in for the cyst. And she said, yes, but we're going to team up with obviously Mr. Day, who is the top honcho at Redhill for the bowel collateral section. He's going to take your appendix while we're in there because you've got some inflammation on the appendix. And to save you any further surgeries, because I know you're so scared, we're just going to remove your appendix because it's pointless. It's a pointless bit of fatty thing in there. You don't need it. So we're just going to take it out for you. I said, okay, yeah, that's fine. And I went in with every confidence that yeah, it was just a cyst, and they were going to take my appendix out. So I went down to theatre. It was quite delayed. I went down to theatre about 3:45 in the afternoon on the Monday, the 7th of August, 2023. And yeah, they just put me out to sleep. I woke up. I remember waking up in the recovery because I woke up very groggy and I looked at the clock and it was 6 p.m. And I was just thinking, oh my God, I'm still here. Like, I'm alive. And the nurse came over to give me a sip of water because I felt like my throat was so dry. And I asked her, I just said, like, everything's okay. The cyst is gone. And she said, yeah, we just took some samples, but everything's okay. Your consultant will come and speak with you in the morning. And I didn't feel like, okay, they're looking a bit worried. They're looking a bit nervous around me. Something's gone on. I had every confidence that it was just a cyst and that I'd be back to work within 6 weeks, recovered, done. So obviously that night I was very drugged up, very drowsy. I stayed overnight purely because I had open procedure. I came out of theatre quite late, obviously, so they couldn't let me go home. They had to keep an eye on me. They wanted me to urinate, basically, and pass a stool to know that everything was okay in there. So that was that. And then this was the day that I got told what they'd found. So it was about 11 a.m. on the 8th of August, 2023, a day that I'm never going to forget, to be honest.
That one doesn't forget. I mean, that's just something that turns
It'll
a life around.
always be etched in my mind because I got thrown into this world where I didn't know what the hell was going to happen and what's going on. So I was laying in my bed and the nurse came round. Well, they woke me up at 6 a.m. because they just constantly, you don't get no rest in hospital. They're taking your blood pressure, giving you some medicine or something every 2 hours, and you're just like, can I just sleep? So yeah, she came in at 11 a.m. and she said, what time's your partner arriving? And I said, well, around about lunchtime, I think. I said, why? She said, no reason. Just your consultant wants to talk to you with your partner present about how the operation went and everything. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, he'll be around about midday. So he arrived. Yeah, this like whole thing is just like I was watching someone else's life unfold in the next half an hour of being in that room. I was laying in the bed and in walks my consultant with two other ladies behind her. It was only after she told me what they'd found that I recognised that the lady actually had a Macmillan lanyard around her neck. So I lay there and she said, right, the cyst, we got the cyst out. It's completely fine. There was no benign features with the ovarian cyst at all. It was very large. It was 17 centimetres. It was filled with fluid. Sorry, this is like going back, so you have to bear
Course.
with me. She said that that went fine, but however, we couldn't take the appendix. And I looked at her like, oh, why? And the words I will always forever remember in my head is, I'm really sorry, Faye, but we found a cancer. And I don't know, like that for me, my first question was like, where? Because I lost my mom. And I was kind of petrified of the word being bowel, and just thinking, here we go. Here we go. My history's repeating itself. And after 2 years, like it's so soon to even be told that I've got cancer. And yeah, she said, on the appendix. And I just looked like, what? On the appendix? And she said, yeah, you have a tumor on the appendix. We've taken biopsies of it. It has been there for a very long time. What do you mean, a very long time? Like, I said, how long? She said, well, we don't know for sure, but a while. It's a very slow growing kind of tumor. She said, however, I'm going to leave you now with Nikki, who was the Macmillan nurse, and she'll explain more details to you. And I just looked at myself because I had a mirror directly in front of the bed. Like I had like a little chest of drawers and then the hospital bed and then the mirror. And I just looked at myself in the mirror and I actually said in the mirror, like, this is it. This is like history repeating itself. And my partner was by the bedside. He was crying. I didn't have no tears at that point. I didn't cry. Like my partner was like, you're not even crying. And I was like, because I'm numb. It will hit me probably when everyone's gone out of the room, but at the moment I am numb. So I basically said to my Macmillan nurse, what does this mean? Like, what is it? Am I going to die? And you know, they try and play it down quite a lot. No, don't be silly. You know, my brother's just undergone an operation. It'll be a right hemicolectomy. That's what they're going to do with you. Where they'll take the appendix, they'll take a little bit of your small bowel. And my question was, oh my God, am I going to have a stoma? Because I watched my mom struggle a lot with hers. And this was a lot for me to process. And she was like, no, this operation only involves a small bowel. So it's just scraping deposits off because we can see some mucin around the bowel on the outside of the bowel. And she said, and that's it. 6 weeks, you'll be recovered and you'll be, your life will go on. You might have a bit of chemo as a safety net, you know, to mop up any cells or anything that are there. But apart from that, no, everything's fine. So I was like, right, okay, so another operation, great. Another open surgery. This one would have took, she said, about 4 to 5 hours. So I was like, okay. She said, but we need to wait for the biopsy results. That will tell us all we need to know, and then we'll take it from there. And you know what? When I got home, it was like I wasn't in my house anymore. It was like I was just catapulted into this dark world of cancer, not knowing your future. Like I said to my partner, like I'm gonna have to like look at funeral plans because I'm not gonna live. I'm not gonna see 40. I'm not gonna see 50. I don't know. Like in 5 years, I could be dead. Do you know what I mean? Because of how my mom's story progressed. After 5 years, she battled it and then she passed away. So I always relate back to my mom's story, even though they told me that it's a completely different cancer to my mom and I need to try and separate the two. It's very difficult to do that when you're in the whole situation mentally.
Definitely. Now, just for my understanding, now you went in for the cyst. If you had not had the cyst, would they not have found this cancer?
They don't really know for sure. The Basingstoke of the specialist, which I'm going to get to obviously later on, he did say that sometimes pseudomyxoma peritonei, PMP, that people know it for short, because a lot of people like look at the word and go, how do I say that? But I've heard it for so many times now, I can pronounce it fine. Sometimes, because it's a mucinous neoplasm, a mucinous tumor releases like a glue, sometimes that can form a cyst. But there was no, at the point before I went to Basingstoke, there was no connection between the cyst and the cancer diagnosis.
All right.
So yeah, in the weeks leading up to the biopsy results, I was told we'd get them in 2 weeks, and I got them within five. Every Tuesday, I would get this call. I'm really sorry, I haven't been able to discuss you in the MTT today because we haven't got your results still. Every Tuesday felt like another brick to the face for me because A, I didn't know what this type of cancer was. B, I didn't know what stage it was, how bad it was, and that actually left the tumor inside of me because it was dangerous to bring it out.
That actually opened you up, looked at it, and decided, okay, we're not doing anything until we know for sure what it is.
Yeah, well, Mr. Day, luckily, he'd seen this before. But however, speaking to other survivors and people that have been on the same journey as me through Instagram and social media, a lot of surgeons haven't seen it before. And people go in thinking they've got appendicitis, especially in men. In women, it's more ovarian cysts or sometimes appendicitis, but in men, it's mostly the appendix. They think they've got a burst appendix. They go in, they take the appendix out, then they'll do a biopsy, and then they phone and say, actually, it wasn't appendicitis, it was pseudomyxoma, PMP, appendix cancer. So I was quite lucky that he noticed what it was and told me, had they have removed it, it could have ruptured the tumor, which releases this mucin, and that could have put cells further up into my body as they were bringing it out. So to basically protect me, they left a cancer in there, which was a little bit weird to get my head around, to be honest, because I was like, what do you mean you've left me with cancer? You've left the cancer in there. What's it doing to my body? What you know? How do you know it's not killing me? How do you know it's slow, like low grade or slow growing or whatever you've told me? And they just said, you've got to trust us. We've seen, Mr. Day knows of this, which is
Okay.
why we left it alone.
Well, I suppose that was blessing in disguise that you had this particular specialist at your side.
Yes. Speaking to other survivors, I'm quite thankful that he did notice that, and that it wasn't just, the appendix pulled out. But I
Exactly.
believe that these days now, if they suspect anything with the appendix, they put a plastic bag around the appendix
Okay.
before they remove them now, because
Okay.
of many stories that have progressed with it being appendiceal tumor, and people have had a wider spread in the top of their body.
Okay, all right.
So I have learned that on this journey.
Yeah. We're going to continue with your journey just after the commercial break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm joined by Faye, and we were just at the point where she had been told that she's got appendix cancer and was waiting for her biopsy. Now, do carry on, Faye. What happened after that?
So obviously, like the MDTs kept phoning me saying they couldn't obviously sit down and discuss my case. I didn't have my scans. So Mr. Day, Nikki, and the colorectal, sorry, department at Redhill, and my partner all wrote an email to the top of the pathology people saying, look, this is very distressing. This female already suffers with anxiety, and this is really heightening it.
Yeah.
And yeah, can we rush this through? And then I got the call. Like Tuesdays is a very significant day for me. It's like everything, it seems to be like Tuesday is MDT day, I think that's what it is all about. So I got the call, but my partner took it because we knew what the call was. And I was just in the bedroom listening, like thinking, like, this is it, this is it, this is it. We're going to know now if this is bad or not. And I heard him say, okay, so it's low grade. Right. And then that's when I went into the room next door, because my partner works from home, luckily. So he was in the office, so he's made into the office. And yeah, I just said to him, I'll talk to them now. And he was like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I'll take over the call now. So yeah, the lady Jonah, she basically said to me, we've had the biopsy re results back, as I was explaining to your partner, Will, it's low grade. I said, okay. I said, obviously, that is that the best one of the ones to get, because I had done a bit of Googling. We all go on Google
Yes.
when I got diagnosed, but it's not good to go on Google. It really didn't help me at all mentally. And I know I preach don't go on Google, and I still do sometimes, but you have to try and step away from Google, because it's not good for you mentally when you've got a cancer diagnosis to go on there, because you look at survival rates, you look at, am I going to die? And everyone's got their own sort of journey and story, obviously, and you don't know everyone's medical history and their background, so you can't really compare yourself with others, even though it's very hard not to. And I basically said to her, right, okay, so still right hemicolectomy, still coming to Redhill for the surgery. And she said, no, we're going to refer you over to our friends in Basingstoke. And
Okay.
I said, right, why Basingstoke? Like, why can't they do it there? And she said, because it's now broken through the appendiceal wall and it's gone into your, what they call the peritoneum area, your tummy. Our friends at Basingstoke specialise in this. And you've got something that we believe is called Pseudomyxoma peritonei.
My gosh, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, PMP for short. And I was like, right, but is it still a right hemicolectomy, but at Basingstoke? And she said, I can't say for sure, but probably not.
Okay.
And that was how that call was left. Like, right, okay, so what did I do? I went back to Google.
Of course, of course.
PMP, Pseudomyxoma peritonei, and it came up with, it is a slow growing cancer. It starts as a polyp on your appendix, which is actually benign when it's on your appendix, which is very weird. However, when that starts to rupture, or pop,
Mm-hmm.
that's when it becomes a malignant tumor
Okay.
because it will start spreading cells through the abdominal wall and then they break through, which is why I had this cancer for 5 years
Wow.
without knowing.
My gosh. You had no symptoms other than what you said. You had period pains, but that must have been the cyst.
Yeah, that was down to the cyst, yeah.
Yeah.
So I basically then had to wait for Basingstoke to contact me. So I said, how long is that going to be? And they were like, we've sent the referral over this morning, so hopefully not too long.
Yeah.
There's two hospitals that specialise in this cancer in the UK. You've got the Christie in Manchester, or you've got Basingstoke at the North Hampshire Hospital, peritoneal malignancy unit. And yeah, they referred me to Basingstoke. I had a call from my consultant secretary, and she basically said, we've got your referral, so we'd like to book an appointment with you now for September the 18th with Alexios Zavanakis. Alex, I call him. Everyone calls him Alex for short. And I said, okay. And I asked his secretary, I said, like, is this cancer bad or like, what is it? And she said, I'm only the secretary. I'm not medically trained to tell you anything. I'm sorry. It'll have to be down to Alexios, Mr. Zavanakis, to tell you what's going on. So I was like, right, okay. So that was that. And then in the meantime, I had a letter to go and see Mr. Day at Redhill again, just to discuss things before he handed me over to Basingstoke, obviously. And I think that was on the 8th of September. I went to, I think beginning of September sometime, maybe 3rd or the 8th or something like that. And I went into Redhill. Yeah, I just said to Mr. Day, like, what are they going to do with me at Basingstoke? I said, because I've been Googling some stuff and it comes up with something called complete cytoreduction, CRS, with something called HIPEC. And he said, yeah, that's what they do there.
So explain to me what is that? Because I've never heard that before.
So complete cytoreduction, the CRS, is the operation that they do when the cancer has gone into the peritoneal cavity or the peritoneal area. And the HIPEC is the heated intraperitoneal chemotherapy treatment, which is what I had during the surgery. So they basically boil you alive on the table for 2 hours at 110 Fahrenheit after you've had the surgery of the removal of whatever they've taken out of your abdomen.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, so I sat there with Mr. Day and I said, right, I've saw something online that this is dubbed mother of all surgery. And he said, yes, that's right. And I was just like, my God, like what, how has this become all this from a simple cyst? Like what the hell, how? And he said, I think it's been, you're lucky because the cancer's been found by mistake. Had it have not been for the cyst, you probably would be at work now, not even knowing what's going on.
Exactly.
Which is quite scary.
Absolutely.
Because I've always been very active, like running with the dog. I mean, I was a coach driver for 6 years before being a flight dispatcher. And I had to load very heavy suitcases. I've been touring all around Europe. I was so healthy. Like, I don't drink much. I don't smoke. So all of these questions is like, what, how, why? That's all you keep questioning to yourself is how and why. And yeah, so he said, so they're going to look after you at Basingstoke. They'll do this surgery, you know, get it all clear. And then you'll come back to us at Redhill for yearly scans. And I said to him, do people survive this? Like the massive surgery and this sort of cancer? And he said, yes. He said, hi, I have patients on my... under me here that have been at Basingstoke and then come back to me 5, 6, 10 years, some of them still thriving.
Okay.
And I was like, right, okay. And then the Macmillan nurse was there as well, so she said, how about we go over to the center, we can have a little chat in there if you like. And I was like, right, okay. I was gonna say no because everything like Macmillan wise took me back to my mom, obviously. But I thought, you know what, This is it now. So if I can get any sort of info over there, I'll go.
Yeah.
So I walked in there and it's very, very quiet. You know, like piano type music playing. Would you like tea? Would you like coffee? Some biscuits? Just seeing the word cancer everywhere. You know, you just think this is my life. This is my reality. This is it. And the lady came out, speak very calmly and everything. And she said, what have you been diagnosed with? Can I ask? And I said, something called pseudomyxoma peritonei, PMP for short. And she said, oh, she said, I don't have any literature on that type of cancer because it's so rare. And you know what? For me, that was the light bulb moment then. Mm-hmm. I actually said to her, huh? You don't have anything? And she said, no, we don't have anything on appendix cancers or pseudomyxoma, I'm afraid. She said, however, I can give you this leaflet on bowel cancer. And I was like, well, no, my mum died of bowel cancer, so I will pass on that one if you don't mind. Thank you. As she said, well, we've got some diet leaflets and things if you want to take some of them with you. So I said, yeah, I'll have some diet leaflets. And that was that. I left Macmillan. And in the, like, you know, in the meantime, going to see Basingstoke, I tried to live, if you like. Obviously, phoning my employer and saying it's a lot bigger than we actually thought it could ever be, that I have cancer. You know, my line manager was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I have cancer, and it's now going to be a bigger operation. So, but I had to try and live in between. But it was really weird because you try and live every day, and you go out and you spend time with your partner and your dog or your loved ones, and every photograph you take, you just want to take it because you want to give more photos to someone if you're not here anymore. And that's how it felt. That's what I felt I was doing a lot of the time. So, like with my mom, I wish I'd took more photos together. I wish I'd took her out more. And I didn't want that regret for my partner. So I thought, yeah, let's go out and do these little things, get some photos. There was an event at Tully's farm near me, sunflower fields. And the main purpose I went there for was to get some nice photos with the sunflower background. So if I didn't make it through the op or the cancer, that my partner would have these nice photos to remember us by with some nice sunflower bright colours around us.
Wow.
So that was always my thinking, like, am I doing photos now to get memories, like to give to someone else if I don't make this?
But isn't it incredible how you sort of focus on, I mean, you're taking the focus away from yourself, but focusing on your partner, how is he going to cope?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, obviously when my mum passed away, she had a funeral plan in place, which I didn't know about till she'd passed away. So after diagnosis, I was doing the same. I was looking at funeral plan every day on Google, cooperative, you know, all these local funeral directors, planning my own funeral. Like, I want the circle of life, you know, the Lion King, maybe a Kylie song somewhere in there, because I've loved Kylie Minogue since I was 8 years old, still do. I think she's great. And you just try and, like, yeah, it's like weird. You're sitting there and planning your own funeral. And he would come to me and say, stop this, stop this. Like, not shouting at me aggressively, but just like getting frustrated, like, stop this, we don't know what's gonna, you know, you don't know what it is at this point, because at that point I didn't know the biopsy results. But I just said to him, look at my mum, like, cancer kills, this is the only ending, cancer will kill me, it's the only ending. And those are all the thoughts that you have. So, you know, anyone that's been recently diagnosed or gone through it or survived it, these thoughts won't ever go away. That they live with me now forever until, well, for me, it's the 20 years worth of scans. Because the cancer is so slow growing and rare. And it takes a long time for a tumour to regrow again if it does come back. Then, yeah, this is my life. It's just scans. So obviously, in the meantime, we went out and did lots of things. I went to see Kylie Minogue in Leicester.
Okay.
I'd never seen her before in my life live, because tickets go like in seconds.
I know.
All her tours were always sold out. So I was like, I'm never going to see Kylie before I die.
I loved her too. I went to see her many years ago as well. And it's an incredible performer, really.
And you know what? Not only that, but being there at Leicester, I didn't even think about cancer that day. It was like, I don't have a tumour. I don't have cancer in here. What are you on about? You know, I have recovering from a cyst, which was very difficult recovery as well, walking and all that sort of stuff. But nothing like the magnitude as I've gone through recently with recovering from an op. But yeah, when she came out, it was quite surreal. A, that she was there, and I was like, oh my God, it's Kylie. But B, the energy on stage, that and seeing a cancer survivor standing in front of me, And a much deadlier cancer, breast cancer, of course. And I just thought, do you know what? This is incredible. And she did an exclusive song called "Hold On To Now," which is from a new album coming out, Tension. And God, I'm like, I'm plugging Kylie here.
That's
Get
not a
her
bad
album,
thing.
Kylie. Yeah, and it's called "Hold On To Now." And do you know what? Even now, to that day, I feel that that is like my cancer journey song,
Okay.
because like the lyrics are, "Dreaming we'll be dancing forever. Hold on this feeling together. We'll figure it out somehow. Keep holding on to now." And when I heard those lyrics to me for the first time, when she sang them as an exclusive in Leicester, the whole thing gave me goosebumps,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
still does when I hear it now, because I'm like, "Dreaming we'll be dancing forever." Well, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And I found out recently that she actually wrote that as looking back on her whole life and her journey herself,
Okay.
and just how she felt with all the trauma and everything.
We're going to have a quick commercial break and then we'll be back with Stoma for Life here on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. Now, Faye, you were talking about going to see Kylie Minogue in Leicester and, yeah, seeing another cancer survivor on stage, living her best life. Very inspiring indeed. So, what happened then?
So yeah, I went to see, that was on the 17th of September that I went to see Kylie. 18th was when I actually was going to meet with Basingstoke. So I had that really good day, and then the Monday was like, right, this is it. We're going to find out what's going on now. So I went to Basingstoke and I met with the consultant, and he basically said, "You've got a rough idea of," I said, "I heard there's something called CRS here, and they dub it MOAS, mother of all surgery." And he said, "Yeah." He showed me my scans, but it just looks like a load of different colours and like blobs everywhere. So they didn't mean anything to me, but he showed me the tumour, and he showed me the inside of my tummy and everything. And he said, "Unfortunately, we've got a bit of a shopping list of things we're going to take." And I was like, "Right, like," and he said, "Well, obviously the appendix, because that's where the tumour is." He said, "But we need to take your spleen. We need to take your gallbladder. We need to take the lesser omentum and the greater omentum. We need to take some from the small bowel." Again, I said, "Is it going to be a stoma?" And he said, "I don't know until we go in there what we're going to find." He said, "This, I can only be honest with you. I can sit here and tell you what I see from the scan, but as you know, with your CT scan, it didn't show anything before. So the only way we're going to know is opening you up, unfortunately, and knowing what's there on the day." So I was like, "Right, okay." And he said, "And it's advised that we do a full hysterectomy." And
Frost.
I was like, "But Mr. Day said my ovaries were okay and they were healthy. There's nothing, he didn't see anything there." He said, "No, that's right. They do look okay from the scan, but the ovaries are a breeding ground." He
Wow.
said so, and he looked at me with a grave look in his eye and basically said, if you don't give me permission to take everything, ovaries, womb, uterus, fallopian tubes, the whole shebang, you are a ticking time bomb."
Wow. Oh my gosh.
He asked me if I wanted children, and I never have, I'll be honest. I've always been very career minded. I've never really been the maternal type. And my partner wasn't too fussed about kids either. We have a four-legged child instead, my dog. And I just said, "No, not really fazed about children." He said, "Because I can freeze your eggs if you wish, on when I take things out." And I said, "No, it's fine. I just want you to make me cancer free. So whatever you've got to take when I'm asleep, you've just got to take what you've got to take, really. You know best." And that was the plan that I left with, because I'd been under, obviously, recently with the open surgery from the cyst. He said that we can't operate. Actually, his words were, "I can't open you up straight away again. or hack you up. And I was like, right, okay, hack me up, lovely. But he was just trying to bring a little bit of light entertainment, I suppose, to the situation. But yeah, he said, so we'll aim for sometime in November. And I was like, right, okay. So I left there with a little bit of hope that they knew what they were doing. Because in the meantime, I had met a lady called Karen, and she's 12 years cancer free from this. And she lost everything.
Exactly the same surgery you had.
Yeah, I've met quite a few actually. The first lady that reached out to me was Lindsay in New York. She reached out after I put a post about a cyst up. So I just put a picture of my tummy up with a cyst in it, obviously. And then she reached out. So she was my first glimmer of hope that, wow, okay, there is someone out there that's had this like cancer and had this surgery, and she's 2 years cancer free. So it was that little bit of glimmer. It's like you're constantly searching for that glimmer of hope, aren't you?
Yes,
Constantly searching to know that, yes, it's gone with loads of other people. So why can't I have the same sort of outcome? And yeah, Karen, 12 years cancer free, lost everything that I lost, treated at Basingstoke. And she's still 12 years. She was like, last month was her 12th year anniversary of being Ned. So that gave me a lot of hope as well. And I don't know, it's every day I question it, like, have they got it all? I know they told me they have they got it all? So yeah, I think in the time leading up to my admission to Basingstoke was my birthday on the 28th of September. So my partner took me away to Snowdonia in the middle of nowhere in the Snowdonia Country Park, National Park, sorry. And for my birthday, we had a nice meal indoors. We went for a walk because it was dog friendly. Our dog came along on the holiday. And I just felt like I was a million miles away from cancer, and it was what I needed. And I think I had to go through that stage where I need to accept that this is what's going to happen. This is it. I've got no choice. It's either what I called do or die. And that's the situation I was in. He said the only alternative to the operation would be to do what we call watch and wait, where we would basically do scans every year on you or every 6 months and monitor how it's progressing. And I was like, no. No. I need the operation. I can't go back to work and focus my life daily knowing that I've got a tumor in there.
Exactly. It's like a ticking time bomb. I mean, what does that do to your mental health? I mean, that's just no.
Take it and say, I'll go for the operation. It's all I can do. I want this cancer out of me. I want this, because it felt like an intruder. It felt like this evil thing that was just living in my body. And I was like, how do you have the right to survive inside me even after the cyst coming out? How dare you still be there?
Exactly.
You know, and you feel anger, you feel upset, you feel scared, and you just get thrown into this load of emotions, and you just try and process it, and you just don't know how to. That's the reality of it. You do not know how to process it. And everyone has their own way, I guess, of dealing with stuff. But I think because my mom's story, I struggled a lot more.
I'm sure. Because I mean, that sort of brings it all back. It's something that was still so fresh in your mind.
Yeah, so it was the 30th of October, where I had to head to Basingstoke, because you have to go in 2 days prior to the admission because they have to prep your whole body for the operation. So they start you on the good old bowel prep. You know, just a liquid diet of jelly and clear soup for a couple of days. That was great. So that was on that the first day I got there, I was like, okay, I'm here now. And my consultant said, I'm stronger than I believe, or I stronger than I think I am, because I've done the hardest part, accepting the surgery and even walking into the ward that day. Because some people have accepted the surgery and they don't turn up for the surgery. They say, like, I can't do it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So he gives them a little bit of extra time, obviously, to get a little bit more strength behind them, or whatever they need to do to prepare for it. So that was that day. Will was with me till about 7 o'clock in the evening, and then he had to head off because we've got our lovely dog at home, Neville. And yeah, I was just in my room, and it was quite comfortable, I must admit. And that's when I started to do my blogging. Like, if anyone's about to go to Basingstoke or embark on this mother of all surgery, because it's important to know that MOAS, CRS HIPEC, isn't just for my type of cancer. They do it for anything that's in the peritoneal, so liver, bowel cancer. They've done there as well, treated bowel cancer there. So yeah, it's not just me. So I just thought I'd document if you're heading to Basingstoke into the unknown, like I was. It was totally unknown to me what's going to happen when I get there. It would just give people an insight into the journey. And that's why I had the light bulb moment at Macmillan, because I was like, how can you not have any literature? Right, this is it. I'm going to set my sights on changing this and doing the awareness. I've got the platform for remodeling. So let's spin it around and let's do something with that platform. And that's what I decided to do. So I vlogged and vlogged on the 30th and then the 31st of October, Halloween. How ironic. A night before I was about to be sliced open. Right down the middle. And that was a hard day. I think the 31st was the hardest day for me in there, because that was when my anxiety really started to flare up. That was when I was panic mode started to set in all throughout the day. It was people coming in, dietitians, physio, my consultant, people taking my heart still, my blood pressure, stoma lady came to see me. And I think that's what really tipped me over the edge that day. Because I had to stand up and she drew on me where they'd put it and explaining to me, and I started crying and getting shaky, and she was like, I can leave it here if you like, because obviously the consultant thinks you're not going to need one, and if you do we can just pick up and I can explain to you a little bit more. And I was like, no, it's fine, just carry on. I need to know this stuff. So yeah, and then in the evening I was left on my own, and I don't know, that evening I was just like, is this my last night on earth? Is this my last night? I'm going to see light, or I'm going to see life.
This concludes part one of your incredible journey. Please do join us again here on Stoma for Life for part two. It's been absolutely incredible. It's been a roller coaster ride for me listening to her story, and I'm sure for you as a listener as well. But I can assure you, part two of this incredible story will leave you speechless. So do join me again on Stoma for Life when I'll be chatting and continuing my chat with Faye Louise. Bye for now.